Worry about your neighbours, about what they think of you, what impression you may give your neighbours. When they meet you or they see you from a distance, what impression do they get? Is it accurate or is it a distortion? Are your neighbours threatened or confused by the impressions you give? Do they want to get to know you, or do they run and hide from you? Scientists tell us that the further away your neighbors live, the more likely they are to hold outdated, inaccurate, and stereotypical views of you. I'm sure this is one of the reasons we seem historically to end up fighting people on the other side of the world. But did you know, for example, that once broadcast, TV signals begin an endless journey outward into the cosmos at the speed of light? The speed of light. That means our earliest TV broadcasts are probably traveling through star systems more than 400 trillion miles from Earth. There are distant neighbors. Do you realize, therefore, that if we have neighbors out there living 60 light years away, they are watching the first episodes of The Lone Ranger in black and white? What on earth do they think of the people on Earth? 50 light years away, they are watching Rawhide and Bonanza in black and white. Any better, do you think? 40 light years away, they have moved on to the original Star Trek series. 30 light years away, they are watching The Dukes of Hazzard and Knots Landing. 20 light years away, they're watching Seinfeld and The Sopranos. And only 10 light years away, they are being blessed at this moment by The Apprentice and countless episodes of Lost. Does it worry you what our neighbors in space may think about us? Does it matter what impression we give? Well, if you want to explore this whole idea further, I recommend a new science fiction film called District 9, which is set in South Africa. It has a lot to say in parabolic form about how we treat our neighbors. I won't spoil the plot, other than to say it is a parable about how different races get on with each other, or perhaps should, and no doubt there will be a sequel. So watch this space. But if your neighbours knew about your TV preferences, or the films you watch, or the books you read, your interests, your convictions, your values and priorities, what would they think of you? What about the people next door? Over the road, down the street, the people you meet every day on the train, the people you work with, the strangers you meet? Well, it may have been this kind of question that prompted a certain lawyer to ask Jesus the question, "Who is my neighbor?" Meaning, what do I bear some who do I bear some responsibility for, and who can I ignore? You know, we answer this question all the time, whether we are conscious of it or not. We answer the question by the way we treat other people every day. And in reply to the lawyer's question, Jesus tells this story, a parable, the parable of the Samaritan. The word good doesn't actually appear in the text. The Samaritan. A parable is simply a story with a kick in the tail. A story in which we find ourselves an active, if unwilling, participant rather than an objective observer or innocent passerby. And in these Sundays leading up to Christmas, we're going to be exploring some of the parables of Jesus from Luke's Gospel. This particular parable is as controversial and topical today as it was for those who first heard Jesus. His audience would have been familiar with tales of hapless victims robbed or murdered on that very road. Even today, the road from Jerusalem down to Jericho isn't the kind of road you would take with the family on an afternoon picnic. So Jesus had their attention. He talks about violence and danger, and we certainly have plenty of that today. He talks about crime, racial discrimination, fear and hatred. And in this parable, we see neglect and concern, we see love and mercy. We know very well what the parable says. But what does it mean? What does it mean? Well, in the story, which Jesus very carefully constructs, we encounter a man, an anonymous man, on a journey into the wilderness, a journey he's taking on his own, a journey in which he falls among thieves who beat him up, who strip him of his clothes, and leave him half dead. And that's the key. The key to the understanding of this parable is the wounded traveler's condition. It's not a curious incidental. Jesus skillfully weaves into this story the tension that is at the heart of every human relationship. Jesus says the man was what? Unconscious and naked. They stripped him of his clothes and his consciousness. In the Middle East, we had many different ethnic religious communities. You could identify the stranger ahead of you in at least two ways: by their clothing at a distance, and by their accent when you encountered them. Palestine used an amazing array of dialects and languages. In addition to Hebrew, you could find settled communities in Galilee especially, where Aramaic, Greek, Samaritan, Phoenician, Arabic, Nabataean, and Latin was spoken. Not without reason, therefore, do we find Galilee referred to as the Galilee of the Gentiles. No one traveling a major highway in Palestine in the first century could be sure that the stranger they met was from their own people group. But a short greeting and a discerning eye as to their clothing would tell you probably where they had come from or where they were going. But the man in our story is unconscious. He is reduced to a mere human being. And it was such a person that the robbers left by the road. Who would turn aside to offer aid? Well, in the story, Jesus introduces us to a number of characters. Let's consider them one at a time. First, there is the thieves, to whom he was a victim to exploit. The thieves didn't see him as a human being made in the image of God. They saw him as someone to be exploited. It didn't matter what happened to him as long as they got what they wanted. Their philosophy is very simple. What's yours is mine, and I'll take it if I can. There are plenty of people in our world who follow that axiom. God gave us things to use and people to love. We live in a culture that has turned that upside down. Jesus never exploited people. He always left them in better shape than when he found them. If he wounds, he heals. We must beware of looking at people and thinking, what can he do for me? We may not mug people or steal their money, but we can so easily hurt people with our words and our actions. To the thieves, a victim to exploit. To the priest, a nuisance to avoid. Jericho is a priestly city, the place where many of the priestly families lived. It's the oldest continuously inhabited city in the world. Its climate is mild, all year round. And before 1967, many of the oil-rich sheikhs from the Gulf states would spend their winters in Jericho. By comparison, Jerusalem is cold, it's exposed in winter. So Jericho was where the rich people lived, the priests, the Levites, and therefore they would regularly be traveling this road to and from Jerusalem and their service in the temple. Of all people, one would have expected them to help this poor man. Priest was probably riding. Priests were drawn from the upper class of society. They constituted the privileged elite. No one of any status in the Middle East would take a 17-mile hike through the desert. Only the poor would walk. Everyone else would ride. So what excuse might the priest have offered had he been caught on the security cameras as he walked by on the other side? I've got to remain pure to serve God. When confronted by a stripped and unconscious person, the priest's dilemma was, is he a sinner? Is he dead? Will I be contaminated? How could I help someone who is a sinner, who's being judged by God? His religious laws would have forbade him from going within 4 meters of a dead person in case he became defiled. Then he would not be able to perform his duties. So if he shared the story of what he'd seen on his journey to Jerusalem, his peers would have applauded him for not stopping so that he could perform a higher service for God. Perhaps he thought, it's not my problem. Maybe it was. Why didn't the religious leaders do something about the dangerous road? Cain asked, am I my brother's keeper? The answer is yes, regardless of their race or color. Perhaps he was afraid of an ambush. Well, maybe it was. Maybe it wasn't. What mattered was the person was in need. If we allow fear to determine our actions, we will be paralyzed from serving God. Maybe he thought, let somebody else do it. The priest could have said, the Levite coming up behind me, he can stop. I don't need to. But the Levite could have then said, well, the priest didn't stop, so I'm not. You and I can always find someone else to point to as an excuse for our own neglect. Failure to act when we should is just as sinful as acting when we shouldn't. If we go through our life always wanting our own way, then other people will become a nuisance because they get in our way. If we go through life with our eyes open, seeking opportunities to share the love of Christ, then every nuisance, every distraction, every encounter becomes a divine appointment, an opportunity to serve God. To the robbers, he was a victim to exploit. To the priest, a nuisance to avoid. To the lawyer, a problem to discuss. Jesus tells this story in response to the lawyer's question. The lawyer was an expert in the religious law. Israel lived under religious law in a similar way to Sharia law is imposed in certain countries with a Muslim majority. He then was a professional theologian. The lawyer wanted to test Jesus on a point of law. He wanted to win an argument. And Jesus turns the conversation round to teach a fundamental truth about concrete action. The lawyer was safe with his theories. Who is my neighbor? He is threatened with the question, which of the three was a neighbor to the man? He's threatened with the reply, what would you have done in the story? What kind of neighbor are you? To the robbers, a victim to exploit. To the priest and Levite, a nuisance to avoid. To the lawyer, a problem to discuss. To the innkeeper, a customer to serve. Now, I don't criticize the innkeeper. He had an inn to manage, and that kept him busy. But let's use the innkeeper to illustrate the fact that many Christians serve, or rather serve particular people, because it's their job, and they get paid to do it. Not a lot, but we get paid to do it. Maybe the innkeeper would have helped the man without the Samaritan's 2 silver coins and the assurance of more if it was needed? We don't know. That's not the main point of Jesus' story, but it's worth noting he took the money. So let's follow through on the implications. How far are we willing to serve as long as it's convenient, won't cost us anything? Fine as long as it doesn't interfere with my priorities. Fine as long as I can reimburse. Motive has a great deal to do with ministry. The Pharisees prayed, they gave tithes and fasted, all acceptable religious practices. But the motive of some, says Jesus, was to gain the praise of people, not to glorify God. If I only serve you because I get paid to do it, I am more like the innkeeper than the Samaritan, for I'm treating you as a client rather than as a human being. Of the 5 attitudes demonstrated in this passage, only one is acceptable, and that belonged to a foreigner. I'm convinced that when Jesus said, "But a certain Samaritan," I'm convinced his Jewish audience was shocked, because Jews and Samaritans had no dealings with one another. Every morning, a pious Jew thanked God in his prayers that the Lord had not made him a woman, a Gentile, or a Samaritan in particular. A Gentile might conceivably become a Jewish proselyte, but not a Samaritan. They were lost eternally from a Jewish perspective. The last person you would expect to help a Jew was a Samaritan. I'm sure his audience expected Jesus to say, "But when a certain Samaritan came along, he took one look at the man and finished him off." The concept of ethnic cleansing may be a recent addition to the vocabulary, but the actions it describes have been going on for thousands of years. There's no love lost between these two people. Jesus might just as easily have described the action of a Serb against a Croat in Bosnia, or a Greek towards a Turk on Cyprus, or a Palestinian toward an Israeli in the West Bank. Contrary to their expectations, Jesus elevates a despised Samaritan, the one who did not permit racial or religious barriers to hinder him from helping this unknown victim. To the Samaritan, he was a neighbor to love. The Samaritan didn't blame the injured person for the collective attitudes of either race. He didn't use this individual as an excuse for doing nothing. He dared to act for the concerned as a concerned individual. And he acted in 3 ways. First of all, he showed compassion. Verse 33, "A Samaritan as he traveled came where the man was, and when he saw him, he took pity on him." The word means much more than passing pity. The original has with it the connotation of being deeply, deeply moved inside. It's the word used to describe the way the Lord feels about lost sinners. It's the way the Lord feels about you and me. So when we show compassion, we are merely showing our family likeness. He showed compassion. Secondly, he took the initiative. Verse 34, "He went to him, he bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine, and then he put the man on his own donkey, brought him to an inn, and took care of him." The Samaritan could have excused himself. He was a foreigner in a hostile land. He was alone and he was vulnerable. But agape, God's love, doesn't look for excuses. It looks beyond obstacles. It doesn't ask why. It says, "Why not?" Samaritan cleansed the guy's wounds with wine, soothed them with oil, bound the wounds so that they would begin to heal. He takes the guy to the inn to recover and promises to pay the bill. The lawyer was willing to talk. The Samaritan took the initiative. He demonstrates compassion. He takes the initiative. And thirdly, he bore the cost. The next day, he took out 2 silver coins, gave them to the innkeeper. "Look after him," he said, "and when I return, I'll reimburse you for any extra expense you may have." He interrupted his schedule to help this man. He spent the night. It may have made him late for a business appointment. It may have delayed him seeing his family. But he paid the cost. And what did he gain from it? Nothing except the joy and strength that comes when you do God's will. When you serve in love, expecting recognition or reward, what did the Samaritan show? compassion, initiative, and sacrifice. And then Jesus says, which of the three was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of robbers? Which of the three? When Jesus asked the lawyer which of the three was a neighbor to the victim, it says the lawyer gave the correct answer, but he could not bring himself to say the word Samaritan, the one who had mercy on him, he says. He was still resisting Jesus' attempt to get to his heart. I wonder whether we've got the message this morning. This is Remembrance Sunday, with British troops serving in Afghanistan, in Iraq, in the Balkans, in Kenya, in Sierra Leone, in the Falklands, and many other countries around the world, with rising tensions within the nationalist community in Northern Ireland, with religious intolerance and political extremism growing in Britain, with the ever threat of terrorism, perhaps we would do well to ask the question, who is my neighbor? For Jesus teaches that we cannot separate our relationship with God from our responsibility toward those he brings across our path. The lawyer wanted Jesus to define the limits of his responsibility. He wanted Jesus to identify those on the inside of the circle and those on the outside, those who were neighbors and those who were not, those he had a responsibility for, those he could ignore. Jesus turns the question round. What kind of neighbor are you? I invite you to be that kind of neighbor this week. Let's break the spiral of fear and hate in our community with acts of compassion and mercy, especially and in particular to those who are different, those who are the outsiders, those who are the strangers, whoever the Lord brings across our path today. Because our assignment from Jesus is really very, very simple. Jesus ends the story by saying to the lawyer, go and do likewise.